Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, April 7th, 2012. I'm Arlie Schlanger and I will be your host today. This afternoon we're going to be speaking with Michael Kirsch, who is the principal author of a new special report called NOAAPA 21, the North American Water and Power Alliance for the 21st Century, which is about a program which, when taken from the top, as we will do today, possesses the capability to revive the American Revolution and transform the future for the whole planet and beyond. As Linda LaRouche has been emphasizing over the last 20 years, we've seen a consistent net decline in physical production annually in the United States since the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in 1963, and especially since his brother's death, his brother's assassination in 1968. A significant factor in that decline was the attack on what Kennedy's presidency represented, a return to the constitutional outlook of our founding fathers, John Quincy Adams, Lincoln, FDR, around the idea that in our constitutional republic, each citizen not only can, but must contribute to ensure a better future through developing ever new platforms of production based on scientific and technological progress. And this is what we'll be looking at today, how NOAAPA does that. Now, this attack on that outlook, which was orchestrated from the financial elite of the City of London and Wall Street, included an unleashing of the so-called environmentalist movement. The anti-scientific and anti-human outlook of the so-called Greens. So NOAAPA, as you'll discover today, if you haven't already discovered it on our website, NOAAPA is not just about water and jobs, although it will do a lot for both in terms of increasing water and putting up to maybe 10 million people back to work in the United States. But it can fundamentally change what we think about the nature of man, moving away from the idea of man as a slave of his senses, as British epistemology has brainwashed us to believe, to developing a view of the actual creative potential of man in a creative universe. And that is what we have to do if we intend to save our otherwise degenerating civilization as it's plunging toward a potential early doom. So Michael, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here. Good day, everyone.
To begin with, why don't you give people a summary of what NOAAPA is in this current crisis, what it represents, and then take us through what's in the report.
All right. Well, we are finding ourselves in a situation where most Americans especially see that the political fate of the country just might be sealed. We have, over the last number of years, we've been submitting more and more to a choice between bad apples. Over the last 30 years, there has been a continued surrender of the United States to general policy of cutting back, depopulation, and living within our means, so to speak. As you described, this was not the direction of the country before the end of the 1960s through everything that occurred. And so where we find ourselves with this project is we've now rewritten and resituated this for today. This is the North American Water and Power Alliance for the 21st Century, as you said, NOAAPA 21. And what NOAAPA 21 encompasses is not simply the canals and dams and all of the basically water transfer routes and power generated, but it implies the rebirth of a capability in the United States that we haven't had for many years, one capable of transferring the generational knowledge that is going to be lost to a whole new generation of productive and scientific citizens.
Now, Michael, you named it NOAAPA 21. This actually originated, for some of our listeners who don't know this, it was actually a report done in the early 60s, wasn't it?
Okay, for the background for people, I mean, this... This is a 1964 project when it was proposed. However, it was born in the period when John F. Kennedy was president, and it came out of that sense of Okay, we've got Eisenhower in here. Atoms for peace. Technological thinking. Although there was the constraint of certain groupings in the Eisenhower administration, and just generally at the time, the whole Truman shift of cost-benefit analysis, free trade, we can't be like those commies and things. When Kennedy came in, it was clear he was coming back to Roosevelt's REA, the World Electrification Association, going back to the TVA. He defended the TVA down in a speech dedicating. He pushed all the reclamation programs back. More project starts in 1962 of that magnitude than any other year since the TVA. And yet, this came out from a systems engineering department of a U.S. engineering firm to push this frontier in a much more comprehensive approach than ever before. And it came out of that period, and it came out in the papers 5 months after Kennedy was killed.
So even at that time, it was a revolutionary program.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people were describing in the newspapers as saying, hey, you know, one, we think today we have to go to the bottom of the ocean or the moon for revolutionary approaches in technology, but look at this. Right.
So we took it, you and a team in LaRouche's basement took this plan and upgraded it, updated it, but give a little sense of the process of how that occurred.
Well, this was 2010, and as we know, American citizens, a lot of people saw that there was a chance with Hillary Clinton just from some of the stuff she was doing in the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, not that exactly, but just the whole issue of mortgages and a different approach. President Clinton had taken a different approach. There was a sense of, okay, we could finally pull ourselves off of this 8 years of manufacturing collapse, complete bubble with the Bush presidency and the whole Greenspan legacy. That ended with the whole situation that happened with that election and Obama coming in and continuing to bail out the banks. Those banks, as everybody knows, blew out big time. The whole system and a process of just Fed bailout globally continued. Now, 2010, therefore, we said, okay, we need to have some plan that Americans can look at and economists can look at, and it can capture the imagination by showing how this would transform the economy. So we take all of the magnitudes of infrastructure production and the material production, machinery production. Everybody knows the rail grid's horrible. Everybody knows the infrastructure is bad. So how can you show people an image of a transformation that will move them beyond just thinking of repairing the infrastructure or submitting to the state of things, or submitting to manufacturing? Can we capture them, give them some image, but still say, oh my gosh, we got to do this. So this is how this thing started. We got a report, and we chose an economic infrastructure plan, and I was clear to me and my collaborators that there's no way that just by describing the project we're going to get that effect, but we have to show it in such a way that it'll be real for people, because they'll see, oh my God, this thing's already built in my mind, and it must be done. I can see what the effect would be if it were to be done. So that's how we did the original 3D, using Google Earth, 3D mapping of every single reservoir in the project and every single canal and dam, everything identified to show exactly how it related to the real topographic nature of the continent, and demonstrating the fact that it is indeed something that needs very few individual canals and reservoirs for a continental flood and drought control water regulation system.
Michael, is that original NWAPA 3D topographical chart, is that still available on the website?
In the NWAPA 21 special report, you'll find some footnotes in the first introduction section, which cites the the mapping. You can find it on our website, LaRouchePack.com/Nawampa.
Okay.
We're also making updated tours, which is another a reason to yourself get on the website and contribute to LaRouchePack.com for the continued updated versions of this special report. To get one yourself, we're asking a suggested contribution of $100, and also for the videos we're making and getting these out to various people around the country who are running for office, unions, everybody who would obviously be interested in their interests and having a job where you're contributing to something for the future. That's all on the site, and you can find that there on our website.
Well,
/Nawampa, but also there's a special page we're now constructing devoted just to this report, which is LaRouchePack.com/NawampaXXI for Nawampa 21.
Okay, and I want to get back in a moment to what is actually in the report, but to go back to what you opened with, you have a real pessimism in the population, and it's fed by the idea that the bailouts can't be challenged, we have to protect the banks, and we don't need a physical economy anymore. In fact, I was talking to an economist the other day who said, well, we have technological progress. Every year we double the amount of information that can be contained on a computer chip. And he said, and we've sped it up. Isn't that technological progress? And so I think one of the most important things that people have to think about is the nature of economics. And I know that a lot of talk went into that in the report on putting this report together. What is the nature of physical economy?
Yeah. And that's it. When you listen to the radio, C-SPAN, and other things, you get the sense people are still, because of the controlled media and also just the stupidity of the continued stupidity of people going along with what they know as a raw deal, is everyone wants to talk about that the crisis was a blip in an otherwise okay design for a financial system, and so what we really need is just more spending here, job growth, this and that, when it's the failure to increase real productivity over a 30-year process which generated the final blow-up of the speculative bubble.
And that's what LaRouche is talking about when he says that we've lost every year physical productive capability in the U.S. economy.
Yeah, and we open up in the introduction of this report the situation we find ourselves in with the two generations of loss of know-how in science and production. People who can not just build a bridge, I mean, we're not even building a lot of bridges anymore, but who can conceive of a large project and execute it, and who actually were born and raised in the United States. These kind of guys are going out of style. And we open up in that introduction the fact that every time in the United States where we've been successful, we've always evolved from Washington administration's clearing up the rivers, setting up of navigable Mississippi and Ohio, through the canals and rails of the JQA administration, the full continental development of the Lincoln administration, and the actual protection of our soils, agriculture, drought and flood control with the Columbia-Colorado Basin developments during the FDR administration. And it's no accident that those periods we also were under a national banking or quasi-national banking situation where we had a strong unified currency, we had a capability for lending, and it was a future-oriented society.
Now, Michael, the two major objections we get, one of which we can probably dispense with pretty quickly, the environmentalists who talk about you have to leave the rivers alone, leave nature alone, man is the biggest problem. I mean, this is just a disease, as LaRouche has said, and the sooner people realize that they've been hoodwinked by this, the quicker we can do something. But then you get to the other objection, which is probably what was used more than any other argument to shut down the project, which is, where's the money going to come from? So how did we take that up in the report?
Well, the first intro, we dispense quickly with just this historical nature of the state of the Earth's biosphere over time. It's a summary. We have more things on our website that can get people out of just thinking of the last 100 years or 1,000 years, but realizing the evolving nature as a whole, and we cite that there, of the fact that the Earth has never been one of balance. So that's there. But on the other thing, we have a Section 3, which is probably 40% of the special report, which is how NWAPA 21 will restore the public credit. And the system of public credit is what Alexander Hamilton called it. And in there, we outline that this is not an abstract project that needs to be funded by gathering up some funds or something. And then, you know, long in the future, when it's done, it will finally pay for itself with the sale of power and water and so on. That may have been the case back in the 1960s. We were working within a system, the Bretton Woods system. While we had the Federal Reserve, we had a lot more regulations, and we had a better economy as a whole.
And we had fixed exchange rates, which meant that you didn't have to account for rapidly fluctuating currency valuations every day.
Yeah, right. We had the control over the currency. But what we have now is we have realized that we have to restore the whole system of public credit as it was our nation was founded, and getting back to something that can use the future existence of NWAPA 21 as the basis to fund a reassessed U.S. debt after Glass-Steagall, and tie it all in as one system. That the act of finding out what are assets and what are not, what are merely fictitious debts and what are not. We figure out the municipal debts, state debts, all this crazy university debt even we can figure out. And a real accounting of this, we can now tie in the future economic activity, expected activity of this national project, and also the effects of promoting the project, tie it in with making good upon all these debts over the next generation.
You're listening to The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, April 7th, 2012, and I'm talking with Michael Kirsch, who is the principal author of a team that just put out an absolutely revolutionary report called NWAPA 21. I call it a revival of the American Revolution or the New American Revolution, and we're going to get to that in this next segment. Michael, you've done a lot of work since you've been associated with LaRouche on Hamilton and Hamiltonian credit. What is the most striking thing about the difference between the way people think today about balanced budgets and deficits and what Hamilton did?
Well, Hamilton has a period of being Secretary of the Treasury from 1790 to 1795, in which he bookends his period of time with two reports on public credit. And one of them is an outline how to establish the U.S. debt, U.S. currency, as a source of investment, which he defines as the public credit. And at his end of being in this position in 1795, he reports on what he's done. And in both locations, he defines that there was never a need to slash a budget to pay off a monetary debt, but that it was always a question of channeling the resources of the nation as a whole. As a nation being a association of people who define themselves with a purpose for the increasing general welfare, and if you have an intention to build a nation, all the resources of that nation through taxation and through the revenues of the economic activity put into a national bank generating interest can be allocated toward the funding of a debt. And in this case, we had, and it stands out, it has two long paragraphs in both reports where he says, real patriots will see that we only create a debt or assume a debt if we, in the same very act, provide the means and allocate the resources and funds toward the extinguishment of the debt. And so it's, there's never actually some debt that ever should be hanging there that has to be separated out and as some self-evident object that then you have to cut off your legs and arms to pay off. It's tied in with the economic activity of the country as a whole through two things, government regulation and the use of a national bank or otherwise credit institution.
Now, the idiots out there who are saying the problem we have is a deficit, who somehow have lost the fact that we've completely dismantled our industrial and manufacturing base, but they argue that the Constitution never gives the government the power to create jobs, or they have these phony arguments. But Hamilton was clear that what he did was directly in line with the Constitution. In fact, you could say that he established a credit policy based on the Constitution. Now, how does that work?
Well, you can find that in more detail than we've presented it before on our website in the opening pages of Section 3. And we review the situation that he and Robert Morris faced as the both of the people overseeing the continent's finances more than everybody else, from 1779 up through the Constitution. And essentially, how that worked was we were sitting there with all of these basically worthless bills that we were writing as the basis of funding the war. We had a paper currency, which was absolutely necessary to admit. Nothing wrong with the paper currency, but because we didn't have the powers of the government to channel the resources of the nation as a whole toward funding the credit of the currency, then the currency began to become less and less accepted as something that would actually be of value, and all the debts that we put out, saying IOUs and so forth, become less and less expected to ever be worth anything at all. What we did is we took all these resources. We couldn't get the resources because the states weren't, there was no laws to hold anybody accountable. And so essentially Robert Morris is sitting there writing what he called long bobs and short bobs, writing these notes for people. He had more credit as an individual than the Continental Congress, and people would accept that. But it was all based on the idea that at some point we would get a 5% tariff, or that the states' 5% import duty that the states would then give to the Continental Congress, so the Continental Congress could fund this debt, and now the debt that was in circulation could be as good as money. Until we had the resources of the country all channeled, there could be no intent carried out by the federal government, because, again, the intent or the creation of a debt had to be something that you said you were creating for the future accomplished act, such as the WAPA 21. When we say what we'll put all this into motion, and we can expect and we can assess what at least the correct order of magnitude will be of all of the different sectors of the economy, we can expect all kinds of new revenues to come in. Therefore, we can immediately, when we figure that out, we can tie in some of the state debts, and we can make good on the state debts and assumed debts of the municipal governments, and tie it into the future activity of this project. And that can be done through a treasury institution, such as a national bank, or some kind of special setup that will be done with a special NWAPA 21 authority, something like that. But that's how it works. And so unless the government can regulate, then there's no way it can provide for the population. And Hamilton set up the powers of Articles of 1, Section 8, specifically, as you just said, because out of the crisis that he found himself in, specifically to fund a credit system. And make the argument that you said.
Well, and that really is quite interesting, because you have, first of all, just in terms of the hypocrisy of the people who say, well, you can't print the money, where's the money going to come from? We've just seen $27 trillion created out of thin air by the Federal Reserve as debt obligations of the American people to bail out the bankrupt banks of Wall Street and the City of London, and in fact, French and Italian and German banks as well. So it's not that the government lacks the credit to create it. The difference is, are you going into debt to pay off worthless paper, or are you creating credit to generate a physical product? And I think this is one of the geniuses of Hamilton, but also in terms of the NWAPA report, the Section 3 where you describe this, the people who wrote the report describe how it works, it actually will give our currently brainwashed population a real education in real economics.
Yeah, and what's more important than the specifics of exactly how we're going to do it, which we do provide some working argument for that in the appendix too. The more important thing is the historical sweep and realizing that all these administrations were always on this same track, albeit it was slightly different. It was the fact that what Hamilton did, which most people today would say is some kind of fairy tale. Oh, you know, how do you, you can't just take these debts. You know, they were made by contracts, hard and stone with a speculator. You can't do that. Well, you say, look, buddy, that's what he did. That's how your country was founded. That's how he made an order of magnitude more money in circulation. Based on what? Based on a funded public debt. And so the historical sweeps that are more important for it, I think, than the specifics, and that's what people are going to get if you take a look at that Section 3.
Well, and also the question of how Lincoln organized the country with greenbacks to not just fight and win a civil war, but to launch an astounding industrial revolution, and then how that was picked up around the world. Now, before we go into a couple of other questions that I have, there was a question sent to me. Someone wanted me to ask you this. Because what they were struck by in the report was that there actually was a consensus among key policymakers around John Kennedy and also Robert Kennedy, Senator Frank Moss. There was actually a consensus on the importance of this for the future. And the report I saw, the dedication to President Kennedy, what did you find in the research that people really need to know about what Kennedy represented?
Well, as I started out, we first just outlined this as a project, an engineering project, which not only would do the things that we outlined in the report, put the entire economy into motion, would give us long-term water security. Right now, the National Intelligence Estimate put out a report, a request to the State Department, which basically concludes that we're going to have to decrease our population in the Southwest because they don't talk about any new water. This would solve that problem and actually change the context of such an analysis to bringing new sources of water and so on. So it's going to kick all that into motion and all of these things. It's also going to put us on a footing of looking at the biosphere completely different. Now we're regulating it, becoming more self-determined, as the history of the biosphere has done always as well. But the other thing was finding that this project was situated in a particular historical period. And that was not clear to the researchers when we began this, because we hadn't seen this correspondence of Senator Frank Moss. And when we got that from one of the libraries and looked at these 900 pages, and it suddenly struck that it was, in fact, this whole cultural shift that was defining the end result of whether or not NWAPA ever made it to a referred international committee. It did make it to the committee. Frank Moss was cited by Kennedy in one of his speeches as one of the most, if not the most, in the Senate, understanding the question of water. He was the head of a water committee. And they set up a special committee to study this project. But the issue was realizing he was not there, and knowing who Kennedy was just from his space program and Bobby Kennedy end up being a co-sponsor of this bill. But then when we looked at the original films of John F. Kennedy, which came somewhat by accident, we knew we needed an introduction to the film, and I knew that we needed to situate this from the standpoint of where Kennedy had left off. But suddenly, in the research, just following up on the correspondence with Moss, finding footage of Kennedy around the country, one of the librarians tipped me off to all these speeches on dams. I said, are there speeches that he gave dedicating dams besides the Owyhee Dam up in South Dakota? And suddenly, after a lot of work, people should contribute everything to LaRoussePack.com that you haven't yet capable of doing so for the year, just on this basis alone, because these speeches, some of these were never made available to the public. And in making them available now, you see what really moved me and other people is this is what we were as a country. You watch these speeches of John F. Kennedy talking on where he intended to go, how he completely understood this question of that FDR understood. This is not a question of spending versus saving. Infrastructure development is a form of saving hours and lives. And he was understood clearly in that he was going to do that. He was going to continue to do that. And so you really get a sense that this is where we left off. There's a whole other discussion, the horrific fate that ended up happening to him and everything else involved in that. But it's very clear. If you're a patriot and you watch these speeches, you realize how far we've fallen. And he would indeed have carried this out. He didn't know, I have no evidence that he knew about the project, although it was discussed in 1962, as early as 1962 in some parts of the country.
Michael, I think the other thing on the Kennedy question is that what becomes clear is that the space program was not about a military operation. You hear people today saying that Kennedy was in a race with the Russians and that's why we had the space program. But it actually came from the same conception that Lyndon LaRouche has been developing in terms of the idea that it's through these kinds of breakthroughs in economics and physical economy on new physical principles that you actually eliminate the need for war, as opposed to war is the driver of technology.
Yeah, that was definitely expressed in his understanding there. It's not a question of a specific policy. It's a question of what it means to be an American president who is acting for the general welfare. And you get that when you watch these speeches. And anybody who is a patriot and watches these things, you can see that in Kennedy. You can see where he's going, who he's referring, what the examples are. I mean, it's a direct line. You can tell he studied the REA. He studied the Kennedy and Roosevelt, and the theme over and over is the unity of the nation. He says, I can think of no better way for this country to stand still than to think that what happens in South Dakota is a matter of South Dakota, or what happens in California with the irrigation is a matter of California. It's every state, it's a union of states, and every increase in productivity in one place is an increase in another.
That actually goes right back that goes right back to Hamilton's conception of credit, that how a credit system binds the nation, the states, together to a national purpose.
Exactly, and he even says that, because what he's talking about is all the states contributing to these projects that are being done in one state. That increased the power of the nation as a whole, and that's what Hamilton said. Don't you realize, if you guys don't give this national power of taxation, we're going to be reconquered. You look at that. It's not a question of specific details. It's a question of the U.S. presidency, and that's why this report is much more than just a proposal of a water project. It's situated. There's a history of NWAPA section right up front. I urge everybody to download the PDF and read it today. Call up the 1-800 number on our website. Ask someone about getting a report. there's a whole section there on the history of NWAPA, and we quote from many of these speeches by John F. Kennedy. And you realize this is a question of returning both to that legacy and a complete understanding of the relation of the economic system and the powers of government that we outline in Section 3. And all, so this is all integrated into the project itself.
Well, I can tell you, as someone who has spent the better part of the last two decades traveling between Houston and Los Angeles, that you can actually see the effects of the failure to put this program through the great southwestern desert. And what I'd like to do is take just a couple minutes, Michael, for you to review, because we said this at the outset, that when, this is not just a water project, but what would be the effect of NWAPA in terms of developing what otherwise is sitting there as pretty much useless property?
Yeah, so the project itself is worth doing, and we have situated it through this whole special report and in what we just described. What we're talking about here is a basis to look at regulating the long-term development of the nation's resources and bringing back alive the power of manufacturing technologies, industry, advancement by bringing new technologies back into being with all kinds of material manufacturing production that will be set into motion for this project. But since we're not just sitting in the 1960s, we will be designing in to the gearing up, the new plant capacity, labor training, all of the other kinds of things we can do with space technologies also. So here we're going to kick it into motion. Now, what we're kicking into motion initially is this construction of all the rails, all the pathway supply lines to get out and build this project. The project itself will also open up all kinds of mining and other industries in the north. So now these are the kinds of things that people have in mind. The project itself, however, is a long-term, specifically water security for the North American continent that in the next 100 years, right, and well, beyond, we're adding more than double the current available water for the U.S. Southwest, tripling for Mexico. I don't know the exact figure for Canada, but 20 million acre feet for the Canadian Prairie provinces for agriculture and energy development, and increasing by 100%, the 150%, the current energy in British Columbia and some other places in the Prairie provinces of Canada. This would be the basis to the same thing: double food production in the Southwest, triple food production in Mexico, and we would basically be taking what is now a complete crisis situation. We would leap that hurdle, and in the U.S. Southwest, we would be creating a new climate for all kinds of people coming in for all kinds of reasons, not only agriculture.
Well, and let's go beyond now the broader scope, because as we said, it's a water project. We're facing worldwide food shortages and water shortages. But the thing that you just said, the change in the environment, the change in the climate, the way Lyndon LaRouche discussed this initially is that this is connected to the other great infrastructure projects, for example, the Bering Strait Tunnel, the Eurasian Land Bridge, the Arctic development, and then also space travel. So give us a sense of this broader scope, Michael, of what is encompassed in this thing.
Well, this is a question of continental resource management, and it brings us into the ability to now think about collaborating with other sovereign nations for them to also look at managing their whole countries or continents as continents, and rather than just piecemeal local fixes, constricting one's development just to what might be profitable by the market or something, to open up. But because we look at a national credit system approach, now we're looking at the nation's interests and therefore the government's interests in making such projects feasible due to, again, this long-term credit institution and what we'll be setting up with that. What that means is we can look at the whole continent, we can say, here's a water cycle, how the continent intersects all the oceans. How does that intersection of the ocean weather systems with the continent systems create certain places where there's large amounts of excess rain, and then we can regulate to make those areas of excess into areas of drought control, and also we can set up flood control. So in one part of the continent and the other, we have equality, or at least we have a serving of the need in areas that need it. And in this project, what that means is it's unique because where this happens to be is right on the border of Russia. And so if we're going to be setting up a system in Alaska and British Columbia, Yukon, we'd be opening up an area for supply with supply lines, rail lines, large reservoirs, waterways, barge canals, and hugging the border of Canada. We'll be opening up all kinds of areas where now we can regulate these flows of water, but also regulate trade with Russia, Arctic shipping, regulate resource management, all kinds of scientific exploration. And so the act to build the project will set a lot of things into motion. And as we know, there's a lot of things that are just sitting at the gate waiting to be let out as far as space collaboration with China and Russia. And this will also be a testing ground for all kinds of space technologies in the north, such as lunar mining technologies. The Russians are already doing this. The Arctic is a testing ground. They have a city called Umka that's designed for the Russian High Arctic. And we'll be setting all these kinds of things into motion in this plant. And we outlined some of those in the overview of the project in this special report in Oahu 21.
Now, Michael, I did dismiss the green argument earlier, but I think we just need to take a minute to demolish it. I mean, here's where you see the hypocrisy and the fraud of the greenies. What you just described in terms of the scope of the project is greening deserts from the great southwest in the United States down through the Sonora Desert in Mexico. How can a greenie be against greening something? So obviously there's something else about greenie ideology. And it has to do with stopping any damming of rivers and things of that sort. So just in terms of the helping people who are going to go out and organize for this, who are going to run into this, the Wild Rivers projects and the things of that sort, what's the quickest way to demolish the argument that people get about we don't want to mess with Mother Nature, we don't want to intervene on nature? How
well,
do you handle that?
There is no fixed system. We've changed the planet as I'm speaking for life as a whole here. We as life have changed the face of the planet time and again, used up resources for the purpose of building new biological technologies for another, ransacked the face of the earth for one mineral to channel it into one area. So that's one thing. But on the other hand, just looking at the history of the U.S., this is very interesting. Frank Moss did not receive a letter that was concerned about ruining and destroying the environment through the whole correspondence of people about Nuapa until 1969 in the correspondence, the letters that we received, 900 letters back and forth from his Senate office regarding the project. It was rightfully assumed that the regulation of the environment is one and the same act as opening up and expanding a man's presence and development of the areas. This is seen in the Tennessee Valley Authority. We forested all kinds of areas, erosion control. The wildlife increases with the fishing, reservoir stocking. There was all, it was one and the same act of anywhere we go, we always develop and build that. One discussion I had with an 82-year-old man who worked for the Parsons Company in the 1970s in the desalination department was that we should probably put the EPA back into the Department of Interior. This is what Nixon ended up doing was to separate nature and man. And no such division needs to be done. There's other discussions moving the EPA back in the Department of Energy. In any case, there should be no separation between technological and industrial development and then environment on the other hand. And whatever kind of regulations you need to do, you can put those in there. But everyone knows who's got a brain in their brain cell in their head that this is all a big intention to stop progress with all the regulations on nuclear power and even trying to build a sewer system. All these kinds of regulations are just a stranglehold of what is the necessary technological progress to create the necessary resources and food and water and power for the next generation. We have lacked any investment in that because of, obviously, this overarching stranglehold since the 70s and since this period that we're referring to in the report. The shift in the 60s, and it came in after all of that as an intended shutdown of that direction. The space program and water development in Awapa, which would have been continued and launched with haste by either JFK or his brother, was the first thing. But then the second was to come in and not make any of that possible in either case due to all of these various regulations.
Well, we see the same thing today with the current president of the United States, who needs to be removed as soon as possible. But he just has presided over a savage attack on any area of scientific research that goes into looking at these broader questions of what shapes our environment. You know, it's one thing to say that it's man-made global warming. It's another thing to destroy all the observation capabilities which give us access to the kinds of intelligence that we need to be able to determine what actually does shape our environment, you know, the cutting of the weather satellites and so on. Anyway, that's probably a topic for another whole program. I want to get back to what we have to do now to get NWAPA implemented. You've been doing some meetings. You're spearheading a team of organizers. There are two things that I want to get to. One is, obviously, we need funds because we should be producing this as a really extensive mass pamphlet to get everywhere. And I know you're working on that. But let's start for a moment on the political. You've done some meetings. What kind of responses are you getting? And what would you say to our listeners about what they should do to fight to get NWAPA implemented?
Well, right now you're probably thinking that this election is done. We're going to have Bozo, either case, and we're going to see some other war, and everything just seems gloomy. Now, we do have a chance here, and this report was written as essentially a handbook for patriots out there who even now see that this closing window of opportunity to define a change in direction of the country can be capitalized if such a plan exists that can unite citizens around a single agenda. And we outline this in the beginning of the report, what the situation is we find ourselves in, and then essentially all of the things that this plan would do such that it meets that standard and why it meets the standard of a master plan of this kind. What the report is based to do is to get out for industries, unions, community bankers, people who will read the report and say, how about this? I've got a recommendation. Let's add this to it. But then also start looking at this report as something they're going to use in the discussions of people they talk with to say, let's get our state elected official to realize that this plan has all the essential elements for their campaign for office, or we need to get this to the Democratic so-and-so or Republican so-and-so. This is a national interest campaign. What we want to do is get everyone out there who knows that if there's a plan to do what? Create jobs, long-term industrial productive jobs. Two, agricultural security, food security, water security for industry and agriculture. Three, restore the nation's finances and be able to get the U.S. states to deal with all these crazy debts, get rid of this speculative bubble, and put the U.S. in a situation where we're going to be defended from the global financial crisis, putting us in this situation where we can fund a long-term infrastructure project that will create these jobs and will create these manufacturing industries. We outline those three steps in detail in this report. So what we're actually talking about doing, and what we're doing nationally, and we want you to join you in us in this, is contacting all these groups and saying we are going to make this plan over the next few weeks a basis to catalyze a national interest group that can create the environment for the presidency. We're not looking for a specific person, a champion, to say, won't you still run for president as a Democrat or Republican? What we're saying is that's going to happen if we act now over the next few weeks to define this discussion as the basis for that act. Essentially, we're going to define... Go ahead.
As you say, in the meantime, as people are doing that, we also have the LaRouche candidate slate, which is spearheading this fight as well. So how does someone, first of all, get the report, and then if they want extra copies to distribute, to sell, how do they do that?
Well, they can contact our office, and they can request copies, and we can work out how to get those to you. As you just said, we have five candidates that we're working with as LaRouchePAC.com, that we're working with that are running for office and who are spearheading the discussions with all of the people I just mentioned. And we want other people running for office that we're also contacting around the country to read this report. And as all the people running for office see that this is the plan that is to go for, to outline the need and necessities for the country, then we can start to get this basically to a unified grouping who, as I just said before, will say this is the question of the presidency and not this crap you're hearing day after day, non-issue after non-issue that's been the case during the whole Obama presidency. Even from the beginning, it was a question of health care, when the real question was Wall Street just went bankrupt and we just bailed out all the speculators. Everything on the discussion has been a non-issue for quite some time, and it's now the time to change that discussion. We've defined the issues here. We've kept them open-ended so they can be expanded on based on your response and the response of all the people we're talking about. But I just want to underscore the fact, this is not an attempt to get a little bit change in the voice of the election or put our two cents into it. This is a call to patriots to determine the fate of the country now in a very short window of opportunity, and that's why we're asking you to join us in downloading this, contributing for the report, for a massive printing, as Harley just said, and to join us in getting this out to all the people just mentioned.
The number you can call to reach someone at LaRouche PAC is 800-929-7566. That's a toll-free call, 800-929-7566. And if people call in and they want to talk to you, Michael, I assume you'd be very happy to follow it up.
Yes, I'm willing to work with anybody on this, and we have an email in the report, nawapa xxi@larouchepack.com. You can send me an email, and we'll be collaborating on this.
And one of the things listeners can do is they can set up for their organizations to have a Skype hookup with you or one of your collaborators so that your organization can be briefed on this, so that you can have a group getting together, read the report, and take your questions to Michael or his collaborators. We're talking about something that has to happen quickly because right now the media is saying it's Romney versus Obama. That's hanging versus lethal injection. Now, the question is, how do you change it? And you change it on the basis of principle. And what Michael has outlined today, I think, is a very exciting idea. What's in the report gives you that material. So, Michael, we have about 4 minutes, 3.5 minutes left of the program. How do people have to think of themselves in order to be able to wage this kind of battle? Because this is one of the things we come up with. People say, these are good ideas, thanks for the information, but I can't do it. What's the change in identity that has to occur if we're going to make this work?
Well, people have to realize that you're a citizen or patriot of a nation, and all the detailed information that someone may request to be won over or something is secondary to the fact that as a patriot of a country, you have a legacy of your nation over the course of generations that you can call upon and other people will respond that of which direction the country should go. And I think that the purpose of this report, and especially Section 3, is to solidify that intent that you may have to say, I will not allow the direction of the country to go in this direction. I'm going to act to define this. And it's my authority as a citizen, not just to go out there and scream and shout. And we saw some of that some months ago with the Occupy Wall Street campaign. But what we're talking about here is, it is the case that there is a certain historical legacy of the United States. We've now captured it not only from the 1900s or Roosevelt. We've now captured the fact of John F. Kennedy's intent. And so those people who are more a patriot than a Democrat or Republican will respond to this, and we can break the shackles of what seem to be currently solidified groupings and factions of the country as a whole. And now this can be defined by the principles and legacy that are enclosed in this report.
I think the optimistic thing that people will discover is that, in fact, your fathers, your grandparents, your grandmothers did think in this way. The sacrifices that were made to get us out of the Depression, working with Franklin Roosevelt to win World War II, there was a different conception of what it meant to be a human being back then. And we've become cynical and self-seeking. And that's got to change. And I think what is really important about this report is someone who reads it can start being happy about being an optimist. And I thank you, Michael, for joining us today, for the work you're doing in the report. Again, let me give out that number. It's 800-929-7566. I don't care if this is the first program you've listened to or if you've listened to all 527 of the LaRouche shows that we've done, or however many we've done. If you want to fight to save the nation, call us and become part of this mobilization. 800-929-7566. Get your copy of the report. Get extra copies. Sell them. Get it around. Get the money to us. And let's win the fight. So, Michael, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, and join us next week, again, Saturday, 3 p.m., for the LaRouche Show. Thank you very much.